The following is a lecture on Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 3, given by His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami.
Jai Radha Madhava Puja Bihare. Gopi jana bala bha yuvala dhari. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
The third chapter begins with Arjuna wanting to know what is actually better for him. As we said yesterday, Arjuna represents the perfect disciple and Krishna represents the perfect spiritual master. Arjuna is not trying to get his confusion removed by going to some ordinary entity, but he is going to the perfect personality, the personality of Godhead, for clarification about his confusion. So Krishna has been trying to tell Arjuna that he has to do his duty. And in this third chapter again, we will see that again and again Krishna is pointing out, do your duty. Don't just artificially withdraw from the material world. Don't just become a false pretender. Rather, stay where you are, but learn how one must learn to act for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna begins by saying, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly warfare? Because Arjuna is opposed to this fight on the grounds that we discussed yesterday. So he wants to know what is better. Is it better that he just goes to a secluded place? Or should he work? Should he engage in this battle? Or should one give up, throw it to work? Because people misunderstand Krishna consciousness to mean withdraw to a secluded place. This is misunderstood. Sometimes people think that if you become spiritual, that means you have to give up the society, you have to give up everything, you just have to go to a secluded place. So Arjuna is trying to seek clarification on this point as to what is the proper understanding of spiritual instruction. Does it mean that he has to withdraw to a secluded place? Or does it mean that he has to perform actions? What is actually right? So Krishna is being requested by Arjuna, who is completely bewildered as to what he should do. So Krishna explains that there are two types of men, one who try to understand through the process of Samkhya Yoga, and the other is through the process of Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. And in verses 4 to 6, Krishna is pointing out that there is no point in just refraining the senses, but rather one must learn to use the senses in a superior engagement. The senses, as we know, are by nature very, very active. The senses cannot be idle. So we have to learn how to engage the senses. For example, Krishna says in the fourth chapter, not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction. Nor by renunciation alone can one attain purification. There must be the purification of the heart. Unless the heart is purified, one cannot give up the execution of sinful activities. From the very beginning, one is brought up in a society where he is led to believe that engaging the senses and sense enjoyment is what constitutes the perfection of existence. But Krishna is pointing out in this third chapter, especially in the verses 4 to 6, that the senses must be engaged, and some superior activity. Otherwise, one is just actually a pretender. One may pretend as if he's a big spiritualist, but actually the mind is just dwelling on activities of sense enjoyment, then one is considered to be a pretender. For example, these days in society, there's so many so-called religionists, but they are not considered to be genuine because they're not following the laws of God as they're coming down in disciplic succession strictly, and because the mind is dwelling on sense objects. As long as the mind dwells on sense objects, one cannot go back to the kingdom of God. One cannot achieve the goal of life. In the sixth chapter, Dhyana Yoga, there will be a very thorough discussion of the importance of controlling the mind and how the uncontrolled mind is a cause of bondage and the controlled mind is a cause of liberation. So Krishna is pointing out that one should not be a pretender. One should not delude oneself and be a pretender. Rather, one must learn to engage the senses in something superior. So, again, after establishing that the senses must be engaged in something superior, Krishna again points out that you must do your duty. After all, through Arjuna, Krishna is giving a message to the entire humanity. Sometimes people think that if we take the spiritual life, all these factories will close, the whole society will get paralyzed because the result will be that everyone's going to withdraw to a secluded place. But no, actually we understand this chapter of Karma Yoga, we will learn how we can progressively work towards complete renunciation. How we can learn to get detached to the results of our activities. How we can control the mind and the intelligence, how the senses can be controlled by the proper utilization of one's intelligence. So, Krishna is saying that, Arjuna, once you try to control the senses by the mind and begin Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is activities performed in Krishna consciousness, which is without attachment. So when we work without attachment, that is superior. You will remember that Arjuna actually is attached. Arjuna is attached to his vision. That is, I cannot engage in this battle. I cannot engage in this battle because they're my superiors who taught me the art of warfare. And these are people that I have all along held in great reverence. So Krishna, how can I engage in this activity? But in this chapter, Karma Yoga, Krishna is pointing out to different angles how one must do his duty. Arjuna, as he pointed out yesterday, belonging to the Kshatriya order, it was his duty to fight for the right cause. Arjuna was not fighting for the wrong cause. He was fighting for the right cause. And therefore, it was the Lord's desire that this fight take place to establish the victory of virtue over vice. So Krishna is saying that Karma Yoga means to perform activities but without attachment. And Krishna points out that actually nobody can maintain one's body without work, isn't it? To think that we can maintain ourselves without work is impossible. And as we go along, we will see that Krishna will point out that even he has to work. After all, it is not the material nature works without anybody directing it. For example, the sun rises every day at the right time, isn't it? Without fail, the sun rises every day at the right time. The wind blows, the moon, the stars, they're all there to give us light. So there is somebody who is directing all this. It is not that natural nature works independent of the Lord. So the Lord is also working and doing his duty.
Can you imagine what would be the effect on society if for one day the sun did not rise at the right time? Can you imagine? Have you ever imagined? Can you imagine if for one day there's a power failure and the sun doesn't come up, what will happen? I mean, I'm not a scientist, but scientists have said that even if the sun deviates by a fraction of an inch, there will be a disaster, isn't it? So, can you imagine what it will happen if for one night the moon doesn't rise and the stars don't rise? It's going to be a disaster. So Krishna says, all this world will be put to ruin if I don't do my duty. If you see that the laws of material nature are working perfectly, it is proof that Krishna is doing his duty. And he has been doing his duty since times immemorial. And Krishna says, they will be unwanted population, varna sanskara. Varna sanskara in Sanskrit means unwanted population. So unwanted population means producing children like cats and dogs. You produce children like cats and dogs and the hogs, the pigs. They produce so many children. But we don't consider it our duty to educate these children regarding the goal of life. For example, it is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one should not become a father till he can take his dependence back to Godhead. If you want to produce children, fine. But then give these children the knowledge by which they can achieve the goal of life. Otherwise, don't become a father. So Krishna says, if I don't do my duty, two effects will be there. One is that the whole world will be ruined, naturally. And there's going to be varna sanskara. There's going to be unwanted population. For example, one of the arguments that Arjuna presents in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is that if I engage in this battle of Krishna, there's going to be unwanted population. The women folk, according to the Vedic system, are to be protected. What's going to happen if all these men are going to die in the battle? So Krishna is saying that he doesn't want to create unwanted population. Therefore, as human beings, we should create population that can be guided regarding the goal of life. But today we have overpopulation in schools, colleges, everywhere because nobody is being taught. Nobody is being taught what is the goal of life. So unwanted population is not desired in the human form of life. We should produce children if we can give them knowledge about God. And if we don't want to produce children and give them knowledge about God, that doesn't mean that we should encourage abortion and contraception. But the Vedas explain that one should refrain from activities by which a crime can be committed. So Krishna is pointing out again and again that we must do your duty. Now, the two classes of men in society, they're those who are ignorant and those who are in knowledge. Now, those who are ignorant, they perform their duty with attachment. But Krishna says that those who are actually in knowledge, they must learn to perform without attachment for the sake of leading people on the right path. So, for the sake of leading people on the right path, we must perform our duty. Now, prakatetya mamani guna karmani sarvavasaha ahankar vimudatma kartamiti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul thinks that he is the doer. But actually Krishna says, everything is actually carried out by me. So basically the two classes of people in society, those who acknowledge that Krishna is the supreme controller, and those who think that I am the doer. Those who think that they are the doers, they are just influenced by what is known as ahankar vimudatma. Everyone knows ahankar, Ahankar means false ego. So those who are influenced by false ego, they think that we are the doers. But Krishna says, actually, everything is being carried out by prakriti. Prakriti kriya mamani. And mamani, this is prakriti is working, is my prakriti. So those who are in knowledge, they know that Krishna controls everything. It is said that not a blade of grass moves without God's permission. So those who are in knowledge, they know that Krishna is the controller of everything. And those who are ignorant, what do they think? Those who are ignorant, they think that I'm the controller. I'm the doer. I. Very often people are so proud of their achievements that when you ask them, where is the I in their body, nobody knows where the I is. They say, I made my factory a success. I did this, I did that. But Krishna says actually everything is being done by material nature. So the devotee, one who has the spiritual wisdom, he knows that Krishna is the cause of all causes and he is the supreme controller. And those who are ignorant, mandana. Mandana means lazy person. And just like yesterday we had used the word kripana, and we had explained that kripana means one who doesn't understand the goal of life, one who is miserly, kanjus, one who gets this human life, which is the greatest wealth, but he doesn't want to use this life for the right cause. A kanjus will have a big bank balance, but he doesn't know how to use the money for further gain, isn't it? So the Vedas say, kripana is one who gets this human birth, but he doesn't know how to use his human birth for a more profitable ending. So similarly, there's another word called mandana. Mandan means a lazy person. So Krishna is pointing out that the ignorant person who are fully engaged in self-mutual activities, they're just attached. But the wise men, they just do their duties. And by gradual progress, they will actually come up. So again, Krishna is saying the same point that he has already made in the second verse, dedicate all your activities to me and work for me. And without working for any claims of proprietorship, Arjuna, you will be able to achieve the goal of life. So this is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Bhagavad Gita eventually is to bring one to the point of complete surrender. As we see in the 18th chapter, Krishna has a very famous verse, Sarva Dhamma Paritajya, give up everything and surrender to me. But actually, Krishna has already started establishing that mood from the second chapter, isn't it? Even yesterday in the second chapter, we saw that Krishna was deriving at the same point, that actually you must work for my pleasure, dedicate all your actions to me, senses to me, everything to me. So again, Krishna is again saying the same point. Give up your claim to proprietorship. Of course, we may say, how can I do that? How can I give up my claim to proprietorship? There has to be the owner of my business. Fine, do it. But do it in trust, just like you have Benami. In trust, you're holding it on behalf of Krishna. So if you're holding it on behalf of Krishna, you're doing a job on behalf of Krishna, you're doing your studies on behalf of Krishna, whatever you're doing on behalf of Krishna, then that frees one from the sinful reaction. So Krishna says, those who follow my instructions, they become free. But those who are of envy, there are many people who are envious of the Lord, isn't it? Why is it that one surrenders to the Lord and the other doesn't surrender to the Lord? Because those who don't surrender to the Lord are envious of the Lord. They are envious of the supreme position of God. And because they are envious of the supreme position of God, they don't want to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. They are envious. So Krishna says that those who are envious, they are derived, bereft of spiritual knowledge, and they don't surrender to me. We will see further down in the Gita, Krishna classifies that there are four types of people who surrender to him and there are four types of people who don't surrender to him. But Krishna is making the point that those who are envious, they actually don't actually surrender to the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is pointing out that everyone acts according to his nature. So you cannot just repress your nature. Now again, this point is being made by Krishna to point out to Arjuna, Arjuna, you are a Kshatriya. So don't repress your nature. What can repression accomplish, isn't it? As a Kshatriya, he is duty bound to fight. So why are you repressing it? So similarly, whatever our duties may be, according to the Varnashram system, Chaturvarna Maya system, Guna Karma Vibhaga Saha, there is the division of society into different Varnas and Ashrams. You have the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, the Sudras, and you have Brahmachari, Grihastha, Varnaprastha, Sannyas. But in all situations, one must control, get this attachment, and one must not get entangled in attachment or the desire of being the possessor, but one must always understand that the goal of life is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So again, Krishna is telling Arjuna that don't get attached to regulative attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. In other words, you may think that according to your senses you should not engage in this battle. Don't get attached to that. But one must, because sometimes people get attached to rules and regulations, huh? They get attached to so many rules and regulations, but these rules and regulations become stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. But one must understand the purpose behind these rules and regulations. Just like in the verse from the second chapter that we discussed yesterday, we said, Krishna says that all purposes get us served. But the small reservoir of water can be served by the vast big reservoir also. But the big can be served by the small. So we must understand the purpose. And therefore, don't just artificially renounce your duty because you may have some rules and regulations that you're taking shelter of, or you may have a different sense perception. So Krishna is again saying it is better to perform your duty even though it may be faulty. Now why is he saying that? Because he's pointing out to Arjuna that as a Kshatriya, your duty from one angle may be faulty. That is, you have to kill someone. Arjuna is refusing to engage in the battle because he doesn't want to get involved in killing. But Krishna is pointing out that perform your own duty even though it may appear to be faulty. Still you perform your duty, but you perform it for my pleasure. Of course, this doesn't mean that we can misuse our duty. For example, one can misuse the knowledge that he's not this body and justify killing. This point we had made yesterday, that we cannot kill because every entity has a right to live. And if we just kill on the false understanding that one is not this body, so I can kill, then that is against the laws of God. So, we have prescribed duties, and we should do our duty even though it may appear to be faulty. Now, so far in the third chapter, Krishna has pointed out how we must do a duty, even if the duty is faulty. How he gives his own example, that if I did not do my duty, the whole world will be ruined and there will be unwanted population. And Krishna has also said, whatever great men do, others will follow. Because he's trying to remind Arjuna, you are a great man. And he's also trying to give a lesson to mankind that the leaders of society must be ideal examples. This is the Vedic morality, where the leader considers the population to be like his children. For example, there's a story, and there are innumerable stories, but I'll just give you one story in brief. There was once a king called Maharaj Sippi, and he considered himself to be the father of everyone, including the animals. So once, the demigods wanted to test Maharaj Sippi. So one assumed the role of an eagle, and another assumed the role of a pigeon. Now the pigeon came running to the king and said, please give me protection, I have that eagle that is trying to eat me up. So the eagle came and said, I want this pigeon, why are you hiding it? The king said, this pigeon has come to me for protection. I must give this pigeon protection. And an arrangement was made by which the king agreed, okay, you want the flesh of that pigeon? No problem, I'll give you my flesh. So whatever flesh you can get from the body of the pigeon, take it off my body. Can you ever imagine a leader with that mentality today? Anyway, by the arrangement of the Lord, the weight of the pigeon went on increasing. But that did not mean that the king went back on his word. He went on parting with his flesh. And eventually, the demigods revealed their identity, because that was a test. So, Krishna has said that in the past, whatever great men like Janaka, they've all acted as idol examples. Now, after listening to all this, Arjuna has presented a very logical question. Just like many of you may be reading the Bhagavad Gita from your birth. There's so many people we meet in this country who can quote the whole Bhagavad Gita from cover to cover by heart. But when it comes to living the philosophy, they have great difficulty. So Arjuna wanted to know, how is one compelled to engage in sinful acts even unwillingly? Very often you may know what is right, what is wrong, isn't it? You may know what is right, what is wrong, but you still get forced into sinful activities. So Krishna says, Kama esa krodha esa raja gun samud bhavaha mahasana mahapapa vidyenam iha varinam. Krishna says, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born into contact with the material modes of nature, and then which later on becomes anger, and which is the eternal enemy of the living entity. So, it is due to the presence of lust that we are engaged in sinful activities. And what is the nature of this lust? It is never satisfied. It is just like an itching sensation. When you have an itching sensation, you cannot satisfy the itching sensation by scratching on it, can you? I'm sure all of you have had skin disease at some time or another. So everyone feels like scratching or itching, isn't it? And you try to scratch, hoping that after you scratch for 2 minutes now, you won't feel like itching again. But you feel like itching, isn't it? That's what the doctors tell you, don't scratch, because it just makes the disease worse. So Krishna is saying that the nature of this lust is, it is never satisfied. It is always burning, just like when you're pouring water on the flame. When you're pouring water on fire, the fire is not going to be put off. The fire is going to keep burning, isn't it? Now, the different degrees of lust. Krishna gives a very nice example. As fire is covered by smoke, or as the mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, isn't it? The fire is covered by smoke. You have fire, but first you see the smoke. And you have the mirror covered by dust. And you have the embryo covered by the womb. So there are different degrees of lust. So that some are more lusty than others. The fire that is covered by smoke, it perceives or represents one who is showing glimpses of spiritual life. Just like when you see smoke, you know that below the smoke there is fire, isn't it? You know that for sure. When you see, sometimes you see smoke coming out of the chimney, isn't it? You see smoke coming out of the chimney, but you know that inside this, below there is fire. So with the perception of smoke, you can visualize that there is fire. So there are different degrees of lust. The mirror is covered by dust. The mirror is covered by dust, and you take a clean piece of cloth and you can take the dust out, isn't it? And the mirror becomes clean again. The embryo is covered by the womb. Represents a helpless condition of the child in the womb, you understand? So the different degrees of lust. And this is the eternal enemy of the living entity. Arvatam jnanam etena jnanino nitya varina kama rupena kantya. Krishna is saying, this is the eternal enemy. You know, we are very busy identifying, this country is my enemy, this ideology is my enemy, this community is my enemy, he is my friend, he is my enemy. But Krishna says, actually, your eternal enemy is lust. Lust is your eternal enemy, and which is always burning. So then, you may want to know, where is this enemy? Just like when you're engaged in a battle, When you're fighting a war with another country, you want to know where your enemy is located, isn't it? You want to know where is the enemy. So they have these spying satellites. All these satellites that you see in sky are all spy satellites, actually. They call it for the advancement of science, but they have a hidden motive behind it. They know through those cameras exactly what every country's military arrangement is. So, the next question is, where is this lust? The Bhagavad Gita has told you, okay, you're in. Because Arjuna's question is what? How is one forced into sinful activities? Even though he knows what is right, what is wrong, I was not forced into sinful activities. So, Krishna has said, it is lust only. But then, Arjuna wants to know further. If I just tell you, suppose you're sick. You go to the doctor, he tells you sick, you're sick. But you want to know, what is sick in me, isn't it? Do I have some pain in the heart, the stomach, the liver, the kidneys, isn't it? You're not satisfied just by knowing you're sick. You want to know exactly where are you sick. So you can exactly attack that part of the body and get cured, isn't it? So, Krishna says, the senses, the mind and the intelligence. You have the senses. We have five knowledge acquiring senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the genitals. These are the senses. So suppose you have this lust, kama. How does lust manifest its influence? Through the eyes. You want to see all these romantic scenes, kissing scenes and movies. So now they have all these romantic scenes and movies, isn't it? And if you go to the South India, Kerala and all, you see even more romantic scenes, posters everywhere. Because people want to see it, so the eyes want to see something vulgar. Then you want to, also the tongue wants to taste something palatable, so you're even ready to have steaks and all that, gravy, chicken curry and all that. Then the ears want to hear something, so you want to have disco music and all that. At one time classical music was satisfying people, then they went into disco, but even still they're still not satisfying. So anyway, these are the different openings in the body, these senses. So that is one place where lust is sitting down. Lust is hiding behind the eyes. Lust is hiding behind your nose, your ears, your tongue and genitals. Then the mind. The mind is also full of different lusty desires. And not only the mind, the intelligence also. Even that, my intelligence is only thinking, how can I satisfy the desires of the mind and so on. So Krishna says, Arjuna, in the very beginning, curb this great destroyer of sin. Curb this great symbol of sin. What is the symbol of sin? Lust. Lust is the symbol of sin. Because lust is what forces you to what? Sinful activities. Lust is what forces you to engage in sinful activities. Therefore Krishna calls lust a symbol of sin. So Krishna says, curb this, destroy this symbol of sin. How? With knowledge. Just like you read books, how to have a healthy body, So, like in the Western countries, in America for example, people are very conscious about their diet. So before they buy anything, they want to read all the packages. What are the ingredients? And they want to make sure they consume the right ingredients so that they remain healthy. And they can go on with their sense enjoyment. They don't want to be healthy to serve God. They want to be healthy so they can go on with their sense enjoyment. So, just like we are very conscious about good health habits, how to remain healthy. So similarly Krishna says, slay destroyer of knowledge and self-realization by having this spiritual knowledge. And we must control this lust. We must destroy the symbol of sin, lust. Because this symbol of sin, lust, is so powerful, it completely destroys our spiritual knowledge. Isn't it? So Krishna is telling us how we can control the senses. In other words, how we can take out the poison from our senses. Just like all over Bombay, you see these snake charmers. Now the snake charmer will even have a cobra around his neck. And the innocent child, I remember when I was in school, I used to come from school and watch all these snake charmers, and a huge crowd used to be around them. Of course, at that time, I couldn't understand that a man can hold the snake on his neck because he's done a trick. And the trick is what? He's taken away the poisonous teeth of the snake, isn't it? The poison of the snake is in the teeth. So if you take away the teeth out, and even if the snake bites you, you're not going to die. So the snake charmer can play with so many snakes because the teeth are taken out. But the innocent person watching it doesn't know the trick, isn't it? He really thinks, oh, this man's a hero. Look at this hero, he has 10 cobras on his neck. But he doesn't know that the hero is not actually a hero. So anyway, Krishna is telling us that we must take out the poison from the senses. He says the working senses are superior to dull matter. Dull matter is what? Like this glass is dull matter. This table is dull matter. This glass will only move when I lift the glass, isn't it? The glass cannot move on its own. Of course, in the movies they may show the car is running on its own and the buildings and the glasses are moving, but that's all trick photography. But actually, matter cannot move unless it is touched by someone. So Krishna is concluding the third chapter by telling us that the working senses are superior to dull matter. This is dull matter and we have the senses. And the mind is higher than the senses, isn't it? The mind is the controlling instrument of the senses. And just like in a car you have the steering wheel, you have the steering. So the steering controls the wheels. The car, the senses are like the wheels. But the wheels will only go right when you turn the steering right, isn't it? And if you turn that steering towards the left, the wheels will move to the left. Am I right? The wheels can only move depending in which direction the steering is moved. Do you follow that? So you have the senses that for purpose of our illustration today could be compared to the wheels of a car. And the steering could be compared to what? To the mind. But the steering will only move right or left based upon the mood of the driver. Isn't it? If the driver's mood is to go right, then he turns the steering to the right and the wheels go to the right. And the driver decides, I'm going to turn left, then he turns the steering to the left and the wheels also go to the left. Isn't it? So that driver is the intelligence. You understand? The driver is the intelligence. The steering is the mind and the wheels are the senses. So Krishna is saying the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. In the sense, the steering is more important than the wheels, isn't it? You may have very good Dunlop wheels, but if you don't have the steering, the car can't move. And you may even have a very good steering, but if you don't have a driver, the car won't move. Isn't it? So, intelligence is higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. In other words, the soul is our real identity. So, Krishna is telling us how we must use the senses. The senses are the different outlets for lust. How we must control the senses. How we must control the senses and use the senses in service to the Lord. Because if we don't engage the senses in service to the Lord, the senses will be pulled in the opposite direction. Just like, I'm sure all of you have experienced when you have a notorious child at home. When you have a notorious child at home, the child wants to play and do a lot of mischief, isn't it? The child does a lot of mischief. Now when the mother wants to control the child, what does the mother do? The mother gives the child an alternative engagement, isn't it? You don't want the child to play havoc and ruin your house, so the mother gives a paper and pencil to the child and says, okay, now do this drawing, do this, do that, isn't it? So similarly, if you don't engage your senses in a positive manner, then it is only natural that the senses are going to have a negative engagement. Therefore, Krishna says, one must know that he is transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence. And with spiritual